Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, hey, another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and a few other related issues and topics. I thought tonight we'd do a kind of broad view of a subject that I talk about all the time, sometimes mentioned by name, but many people have not heard a show. I've done a couple early ones on this subject, on the principles of ageless wisdom. And tonight's show is exactly that, a look into the mind of God. Because if we're talking about the principles of ageless wisdom, that's what it really is. Now, a lot of people might say, well, who in the heck says that you're looking into the mind of God just because you have some principles? Well, I think by the end of tonight's show, it'll make more sense. But let's suffice it to say that these are not just my ramblings or ideas, either way. They are, we'll say, the basis for most of the major religions, the foundations of most of the major religions in the world today and even in the past. And beyond that, although each major religion may not have incorporated in it all of the concepts of the principles of ageless wisdom, they have within them some, and many times most. So this is why it's so important to understand principles of ageless wisdom, because it's such a wide and big area of human life for those who have any religious viewpoint at all. Or I should say, have any religious belief in all. Why would it therefore be a look into the mind of God? Because God is the foundation of most major religions. Or I would say all major religions, actually. And monotheism, which is founded and grounded in ageless wisdom, is the vast majority of religions today are monotheistic. Now, there's still some that are not necessarily that. They, you know, Wicca is a religion that follows basically an understanding of, we'll say, spirit gods of sorts that are related to nature. And most religions of that type have passed out of favor, we'll say, with human beings, because the natural forces that religion is based upon have been supplanted by scientific investigation and knowledge, which shows that these, at one point, hidden reasons for these forces now is part of human understanding as a more, we'll call it, physical phenomena than a spiritual one. That doesn't mean the spiritual aspect of Wicca or other religions like it aren't valid. It just means that the foundations that have to do with the physicalness may no longer appeal to some people because it seems to be in conflict with science. Maybe not as we talk about tonight's show, but still, it's worthwhile to make note of some of these exceptions so that we can have a broader understanding of what ageless wisdom really is about. So, hey, without ado, let me give you some ideas. So where does ageless wisdom really come from? Is it in recorded history? Yeah, the Sumerian scriptures, we'll call them, or thoughts about God and other things, predating by well over 1,000 years the Old Testament, had much richer understandings in it, and in some cases verbatim scripture, especially in the older parts of the Old Testament, such as Genesis, etc., that explained a lot more about where God came from, so to speak. But the interesting thing is that, and this is where we have to be careful, because I said Wicca may have some spiritual realities or other religions like it, that if we look at the original monotheism as presented in Western religions, such as Judaic history, it becomes apparent that at one point, even in the earliest parts, there was an acceptance of the fact of what we, or what they considered to be godlike qualities, were possessed by beings, oftentimes from other worlds, who came to Earth and for a while contributed to the development of humanity and then left. How do I know that? Because that's all in Genesis. And if you read it, it's kind of strange, because many people don't read it necessarily taking it seriously, but if you do take it serious, then that's exactly what it says. And by the way, that's what ageless wisdom says. But in a richer context with more detail in the Sumerian, and then if you go back before Sumerian, there are other related oral traditions that go back thousands and thousands of years earlier, and recent discoveries are even showing some form of even written languages that we didn't know about that date back 4,000 or 5,000 B.C. And it appears that the Egyptians had, as early as 4,550 B.C., some understanding of ageless wisdom, and leaders or religious leaders, maybe priests, what we might call that today, had even more thorough knowledge that of the similar kind of issues. Historically, though, if we are going to believe in what is known from ageless wisdom itself, ageless wisdom goes back, in human terms, to the beginning of humanity, which is over 16 million years ago. And a lot of you are rolling your eyes right now, going, what, 16 million years? Wait a second. Thought there were only apes running around, maybe. Who had anything to do 16 million years ago, and how could there have been human beings? Well, that's a whole other part, which we will get into tonight, about how ageless wisdom predicted and explained much of Darwinian evolutionary thought, long before there was Darwin, of course, long before the middle of the beginning and middle of the 19th century. But it was truly a profound way of understanding humanity. And it is explained, if you go back and you piece together Hindu religion and some elements of Buddhist religion and Zoroastrianism, which many people don't even know about, and which is the Persian kind of religion from ancient Persia. And then you take that and you put in the Sumerian understandings, and of course the Judaic and Christian understandings, but mostly Judaic because Christian was a much, much later point. And then you put all those together, you get a much broader context that supports this overall oral tradition of ageless wisdom. Some people have called it in the past ancient wisdom, but that is really a misunderstanding of what the word ageless means. At any rate, the process of putting it all together gives you something way different in terms of looking at humanity and where it came from and why. Now, also, if you're LDS, many people consider that a form of Christianity, but if you're LDS, they also have a more significant element in their religion that is directly concurrent with and part of ageless wisdom going back thousands and thousands, millions, as I said, of years. And that includes the idea, in their case, that their human race actually came from others coming here from another world, even another star system, the Pleiades, And in some cases, other religions talk about the consolation of a bear and all these other, all these consolations and how Sirius, which is the closest, the dog star, the closest star. It's now known to be binary. That's only in the last few decades that they have come to that conclusion. But I think that the important element here is that this has is part of just interwoven of all the elements of religion, both oral and written, and modern and virtually prehistoric, that we are familiar with. And some people today follow with great fervor. So it's an odd thing. But yet when it's spoken outside of the context of those religions, many people roll their eyes and say, oh, it sounds like some kind of weird thing. It's not weird by any stretch. Another thing, cultism. Many people mistakenly think that ageless wisdom is some kind of cult. Well, what is a cult? A cult is a group of people usually dictated to and run by a single person or maybe a few people who basically control the thought and actions of the others, and most of the time their ability to be creative. And really, that's the bottom line. It basically steals the humanity out of them because it removes the creative element. And people who practice anything dealing with ageless wisdom try to help and promote creativity and to produce something that is more godlike in the process, even making people more responsible than they oftentimes want to be. And yet, so you have greater responsibility, greater freedom, and freedom comes from creativity. And so that's part of ageless wisdom. Cults do the opposite. They shut down the process. And a person has none of those things if they're members of a cult. Cults are the dark side. They're the antithesis of ageless wisdom. They're also the antithesis of some elements of most modern religions. They really are. Unless the religion is being practiced in a way which is more cultish. So we have to be cautious when we talk about that. Every religion has some members who have gone off to be kind of cultish. Which means that they don't respect God. They respect only or mostly themselves, and they use God as an excuse for removing the creative element and freedom from those who are part of what they're doing, usually with it all ending up in like one or maybe a couple of leader figures, who generally, because they're human, oftentimes abuse that. And that's not good. Ageless wisdom is anti-cult. It's against the principles of cults. And you can't really do both at the same time. It could be one or the other, and that's completely understandable. To be both would be absurd. Now, people could claim that they are in favor of ageless wisdom and everything else, but they don't usually walk the walk, and they don't live the life that would require that, which is a life of spiritual service, and doing so with respect of their of freedom for humanity in general. That's what they're promoting, is freedom. If you haven't noticed, that's what I teach very strongly on this show. The most important part of God's mind, the first thought of God, was that there needs to be freedom or there can't be God. Okay. All right, so looking into this, the principles of ageless wisdom, historically it goes way back to a time when humanity did not exist on Earth, but there was the hope, even the plan, to bring humanity into existence about, give or take, 10 million years earlier than would have been even possible if there wasn't direct intervention. So if you're relying upon some of the ideas of pure Darwinian evolution, which ageless wisdom completely supports for creatures less than human, then if you were to try to bring humans into the fray and allow the development of humans, it would have taken no less than about 10 million years or greater of time before humanity would even have existed. And oddly, that would equal about pretty close or in the ballpark of the time in today's thought that humans may or are thought to have been around in some very distant form. So oddly, there's some strange relationship there. But the fact is, if you buy into the principles of angels' wisdom, this was part of a plan because Earth itself is a giant experiment, as many planets are, but the experiment here is of a greater magnitude. It has to do with what we'll call the karma on a planetary scale of the being that focuses its energy almost exclusively on Earth. Therefore, it's a logos for Earth's activities and Earth's development, and sometimes it's even referred to as a planetary logos. But that doesn't, most people go, huh? So you could think of it as just a being, not God, but with great consciousness and a tremendous desire and will to do God's work with this planet. And it doesn't do so outside of a plan. It does it within a plan that involves other planets and, amazingly, whole groups of stars, constellational systems, within the general constellation neighborhood, which is still hundreds of light years, surrounding Earth. And it does so because the concern is that our galaxy and some others have built into them a weakness which can lead to evil, and only human beings are really the cause of this. Evil stems from elements of what makes people so amazing and important and different from animals, but at the same time can leave us open to being possessed by evil. Now, if that takes place with Earth, it's a bad thing, not because Earth is so important in the scheme of things as a planet in general, but because the experiment here on Earth is the biggest part of the experiments being done on Earth have to do with overcoming a certain kind of evil, which today we can recognize as mental, more mental evil. Most evil is astral, it's feelings, it's emotional kind of evil. But that evil is relatively weak compared to mental evil. And the race of humanity today, in the last thousands of years, has been this dominated by this mental development, and the mental evil has come along with it in a more profound way. Angel's wisdom recognizes these elements of human beings and explains it much better than you might find in any other source. Here is the problem that God has supposedly recognized, based upon Angel's wisdom, at least, and that is that in order for God to achieve its goals as far as its development of God itself, God decided that he didn't want to do this in a vacuum, alone, and without a shared kind of experience. And even assuming there could be another God that would join God to do it in doing it, it would not be a very rich experience for a being as great as the ability to create a universe God is. So instead, it said, let there be life and make it as abundant as possible. And this life shall possess the qualities eventually of its creator. And then eventually this life will be able to recognize these qualities so it can choose to either be more like its creator or not. That's the first part of God. It's freedom. It's that creative element. And the first part of God's mind is critical to understanding why there's a God at all and what God's purpose is. So this is the principle of Angel's wisdom, which is profound, extremely important, the most important, and has within itself the fundamental beginnings of all things we call virtue or goodness or godliness. So godliness comes from freedom and creativity, and human beings are never perfectly godly. They're never perfectly free-producing beings. They always have their foibles. But regardless, they are the first creatures, not the last, but the first, in the development of life that can recognize their creator, recognize the importance of freedom, recognize and love, which is the second part of God's beingness, their creator as well as being able to appreciate the importance of their creator. So this is the, and this was included in the beginning principles, and according to ageless wisdom, there was a change in the life spectrum of Earth, and instead of the normal evolutionary process following through, the very most developed animals, some of which were collectively over millions of years, bred, and that's the best way I can describe it. I don't want it to sound too sacrilegious, but that's pretty much the way it was, to be vehicles in body form for the mind and soul of a human being. Now, all this has to be done, if you're going to do something like this, it has to be done with the acceptance and participation of souls for animals. Now, that's hard to understand because we don't consider that very often. But according to ageless wisdom, all life has some form of soul connected to it. What do I mean by soul? Soul is an element of God which will say, the best way to describe it, is the overriding part of God's mind that always is free from evil. So it never can become evil, the soul itself, and it's because it's too conscious and has reached a certain level in monastic development at a minimum. So it is beyond evil, and it is always connected in a fashion to beings that are even beyond it. So it can't turn evil. It could make mistakes, and it can lose elements of a person, which we call the personality, but it cannot itself promote evil. That sounds like a cool thing. Yeah, that's great. That's a normal soul. But if you go to the dark side, there are human beings that have created through their minds and through their feelings, and sometimes through their interactions, a group soul, a soul that for all of themselves, that is evil. Wow. But the progenitor of the group soul of evil, strangely, were human beings that rejected God and themselves chose to become evil. Because remember, we're free to choose. So a lot of people ask me, well, did evil come from God? And the answer is no. In ageless wisdom, evil doesn't exist as a source from God, which some religions have confused these days. We can see that. But it came from human beings in collective form. That means a lot of them. Choosing themselves to reject God and to become dark and eventually evil. Evil is the choice to destroy God's growth, which comes from life itself, and eventually also professes, although it may not truly believe it, that there is no God anyway. But oddly, anything that is so anti-God would have a hard time convincing almost anybody of reason that it also doesn't believe there is a God. Because it'd be a seemingly waste of time and a contradiction in terms. But nonetheless, that's usually evil's position. And And these are people who become disgruntled, oftentimes by illusion in the lower world, particularly in the physical, by their experiences. And so they become disgruntled, dissatisfied, and soured about life. And they become negative, hostile towards life, which is God's growth. And they also get hostile about and towards God. When done on a collective mass scale, it actually produces a kind of soul, a group soul, but a soul that is anti-God. It does not exist in the higher monastic world. So it's also a very strange kind of soul that actually exists mostly in the lower mental world, which caused the mental world in many parts of our galaxy and a lot of other galaxies to split. So it isn't one continuous dimension of time and space. But at the same time, this is all part of the tradition of ageless wisdom. And it goes back before there was recorded history that has survived. It was recorded, but in later times than 60 million years ago, but much earlier times, way over 100,000 years ago, into the millions, with peoples that many people don't know about, or have only heard about but don't necessarily believe. So the interesting thing about this, when we look at this from perspective, is most of the truth about ageless wisdom is hid from us because our historical records are so young, and the earlier ones were destroyed, which I'll explain in tonight's show of how and why. So here is the basis of our own existence, and yet we know so little about it. And it is a look into the mind of God. It starts exposing the process of God and how, by God's own choice, he left the door open for evil. It wasn't as though God didn't know this was going to happen, but it seems that there is no way to avoid it if you're going to have true freedom. And anything less than true freedom makes everything about life less. And God wants us to be the most we can be, which is another principle of ageless wisdom. Life more abundant, and ultimately life at its greatest and glorious, most glorious aspect. This is the God of our universe. All right, so in Angel's Wisdom, we have these human beings being developed in form from the best available animal life that could be chosen to be genetically altered to accept the consciousness of a human soul. A human soul is an individual soul. All souls up to that point were group souls. Where did that individual soul came from? It came from some of the advanced animals that were being experimented with, so to speak. Some of their souls, maybe not the exact ones, by the way, were brought together, and they gave up their group nature and became an individual soul by joining together. Isn't that interesting? Not by separating, but by growing together, they joined their consciousness and became effectively a human soul of sorts. Now, there are other ways and other types of souls that came from other worlds that were already human souls. And they had a much earlier process before they developed themselves into human soul. But I'm giving you both sides of how it happened. So some human souls were created souls. Other human souls came from other worlds, and even a planet before Earth that was its predecessor. And those souls also became and are part of the system of ensouling, we'll call it human beings. But at that point, they weren't truly human beings, because you had the human soul trying to join in the first initial steps of this process with the bodies of animals. Now, the two major groups of human souls, some came from group souls that were, we'll say, put together by their own choices to become a human soul, and others came from human souls from prior incarnations of Earth or and/or other planets, and they were distinctly human, more so than the group souls. The odd thing about this is, the more successful of these souls that incarnated into the first animals, the most successful, were the ones that came from the animals in the first place and joined together, than the ones with the karmic implications of having failed, so to speak, in earlier human beings. So it's kind of an interesting thing that the failure rate is opposite of what we would expect, but there's explanations for it. So in this development, Angel's Wisdom suggests that over 20 million years ago, experiments were made with great failures, because the joining of the soul consciousness with an animal-like body, and the soul consciousness being a human-like consciousness, was too much for the animal's etheric brain to handle, because it had a mostly developed second subpart etheric brain, and it needed a first. And the first was underdeveloped, so the animal lost most of its instincts, and at the same time could not think well enough to use its basic desires to stay alive. And some of these animals killed themselves more than anything else by not eating or drinking or doing other crazy things that would, within days to weeks, kill them off. And most almost did just that. They died. And so then there were attempts like 18 million years ago where more of the first part of the etheric brain was developed, and sure enough, there was more time also to develop the soul side a little better. And a few more of them actually stayed alive for months, even years of time, but they still succumbed and failed to develop into the human race. So another million and a half years went by, and they eventually got it. They got some human beings built of etheric, mostly energy, that were like physical human beings. And that's the human beings that we are familiar with today. Now, I want to explain something, because I don't want to get you confused by this. That was really the third race of humans that were developed on Earth, and the first truly physical, in physical form, and not just purely etheric, humans that were created. As long as humans were kept etheric and there was no physical part of them, human beings could be made 60 million years ago, and they actually were, here on Earth. And you might say, well, isn't that great? What do they do if they're only etheric? Well, that's the whole problem. If you only have part of a dimensional body, which is the etheric part, meaning they were in electromagnetic form, what can an electromagnetic being do? Well, ghosts are electromagnetic beings. You've seen any ghosts developing any civilization these days? No. You see any ghosts, go to church? Well, maybe they'll want the church, but they don't really go. I mean, so ghosts are something similar, although these were not as washed as ghosts could be. But they were still, and they did have some form of life, but they weren't physical. They weren't physical beings because they didn't have the physical part of themselves. They only had the electromagnetic part, the etheric. And there were two whole races of those before there were any physical beings. But if you're talking about physical beings, the first started about 16 and a half million years ago. Isn't that fascinating? Now, those are in the principles of Angel's Wisdom. Not all people who know about Angel's Wisdom actually believe what the last thing I just said. Some do. I think it kind of makes sense, but there's no way to prove it, because anything that existed in electromagnetic form Once it's dead, you know what? There's no trace, in a physical sense, that there were ever existence. So it's a pretty hard thing to prove. Okay, so what happened to all those beings that lived 16 and a half million years ago? Well, just as I just explained, they had large, very large electromagnetic bodies of etheric or electromagnetic energy, sometimes as tall as 50 feet tall, but the physical parts of them were much smaller. Now, the greater the level of electromagnetic body to physical body, the less developed the human being is, and the harder it is for them to convert etheric thought in their etheric brain into physical interactions. So civilization was stunted and grew very slowly, the civilizations that happens when human beings interact, due to a lack of physical development. I mean, if you can't build anything, you can't use anything outside of yourself, or very few things outside of yourself, to extend your senses, which is what civilization is about, you don't have virtually any civilization. And it took millions of years, according to Angel's wisdom, from about 16 and a half million years ago to about 8.5 million years ago, before much civilization was created by any quote-unquote human being. Wow. So we're not going to find anything like wheels or carts or houses or clothes or anything that existed in some part of physical world, physical form, from over 8.5 million years ago. It's just not going to be found. The bodies will not be found because they were so strongly etheric. The physical part, once the etheric separated, literally fell apart very quickly. There was virtually nothing left. That's what happens if you have etheric form 5 times, 10 times greater up to that than the physical form. It just doesn't, there's very little physicalness to the being. 8.5 million years ago, things got pretty calmed down as far as the electromagnetic elements, and you start having some civilization being developed. You start having races of human beings develop that are more recognizable as being human. Their etheric senses are overpowering their physical, and they're starting to interact in a more physical way. Now, how could we haven't found too much of that? Well, recently, in the last 5 years or so, they have found some creatures that are 7 to 8 million years old in the western parts of Africa, not the eastern. And those parts are showing great promise that these beings were not just any old, ancient, very ancient hominid. They were more advanced, which is unbelievable. They're more advanced than Australopithecus, which is about 3.5 to 3 billion year old, Lucy, etc. Type of hominid that was as much ape-like as not. And how come those, then, were not as well-developed as the ones from 7 million years ago in the west side of Africa? There's good evidence to support that in a number of ways. And yet, it looks like evolution's going backwards. Well, that's the truth. Evolution can go, and sometimes is made to go backwards. So there's a thing called de-evolution. And that's the problem with evolution in general, particularly when it involves human beings. Human beings do not just evolve. As a matter of fact, they almost don't evolve. They change so quickly because of the interplaying developments, the relationship of the individual soul to the form it's inhabiting, rather than from the forces externally imposed by survival of the fittest and environmental adaption. Human beings barely change because of environmental adaption, but do change rapidly because of changes in spiritual energies called ray energies that help to develop form faster from outside of the human being, but not anywhere that can be found in the physical world. So it completely confounds evolutionists today, because human beings should even exist and should not have developed as quickly. The rate of development is 5 to 20, 30 times faster, depending upon what segment of time we're looking at, than it should be. And there is just so much that has to be examined more about that. Okay, we're going to take a break for right now, but I hope I'm getting you, we'll say, more challenged to think about things in a broader way. Open-minded would be the word. And we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about Principles of Ageless Wisdom, A Look into the Mind of God. And I hope the first part of the show has been interesting, even for those who are familiar with all I've been talking about, because I'm trying to put it together in some perspective that may be even interesting to those who are familiar with it. All right, so let's continue on with some of what I was saying earlier. So evolution is not what most people think it is. It's a method of growing the less conscious parts of life, which is everything up to, but not including, human beings. Human beings slightly evolve because there's still parts of us that are not, we'll say, as God-connected as they could be, especially while we're physically alive. So there's some evolutionary issues involved with human beings, especially during physical plane life. And luckily, or unluckily, it's a short part of our life in each incarnation, and so it doesn't have that much effect on us, a small amount. But what does have a huge amount of effect on us is the God part of us and the development of consciousness. that really changes who we are. This is true of everyone who follows the path of light. Now, let me tell you, people who are evil are radically affected by evolution. They de-evolve, and they don't know it because they prevent the effects of it from happening while they steal energy from others. They use the energy to reconstruct their bodies and keep them as a mirror of what they wanted to be and what it pretty much was when they first went evil. But at some point, there's a thing called cracking in spiritual language. And eventually, one or more of their senses completely fail, along with the chakra that's connected with the energy center, because they can't keep increasing the levels of power they need to keep their bodies alive, because they're actually slightly losing consciousness. So they're de-evolving. And eventually, they can't keep up with it. Now, it takes hundreds of thousands of years in some cases, so they have a long physical life, to say the least, but that just has a more profound effect on their de-evolution. So the more evil they are, the more they have to be more and more powerful, and eventually it's like you might think of it as the absolute economic and disastrous economic system of writing a lot of bad checks and getting caught in the scheme of writing another check to pay for the one that 10 that you last wrote for. And, you know, these Ponzi schemes are, after a guy named Ponzi from the 20s, are actually the way evil works. And also, it uses Ponzi schemes and it uses pyramid methods of development. And that's the dark side. But eventually, it just can't keep up with it. It's inevitable, although it doesn't realize it, that it will fail. When it fails, it goes back to living life in form as a distant relative or an animal of, it could even be a plant, but because it has to live through the senses that remain. And so it has very limited sense, but the odd thing is it's still a conscious being, not quite as conscious as a human being, but still more conscious than a plant or a low-level animal, and it has to live through that body and senses, which causes it to suffer immensely. Thousands, even maybe a million generations of different kinds of lower levels of life. That's what evil faces because it's not part of the scheme that God created. God's scheme is wonderful because consciousness is never lost. Never lost. Okay, so this is a terrific system, but let's talk more about what principles of angels' wisdom mean in terms of the historical development. And as I bring that into play, I'll explain more about some of the more interesting elements of God's mind. All right, so human beings eventually developed in a form similar to who we are today, except their consciousness was focused more from an astral level than from a mental level. As a matter of fact, the very first human beings, the one I was referring to from 8 million years ago, were almost just exclusively physical with very limited astral consciousness. And virtually, by our standards today, extremely small mental consciousness. Now, what does it mean when a human being doesn't have a lot of mental consciousness or astral? It means it can't use those senses very effectively to gain a whole knowledge about a specific subject. It has bits and pieces of knowledge, but it can't take that knowledge and expand it and create more from it than what it has already experienced. So its creativity is lost in those realms. That makes it far less creative as a being, and it makes its civilization grow much slower. That's what took place with this first group called the Lemurians, who had a physical body in a physical continent they lived on called Lemuria, in the South Pacific, where there's just islands left. the rest of the continents subsided, not just below the sea, but below the sea floor. This is hard to understand because we haven't seen it ourselves in modern times. So people don't think it can happen, but it can. Just as a continent can rise from the same conditions, usually where the ridges are, where volcanoes open up, and eventually whole fields of volcanoes open up, and the whole continent can arise and equally fall. Now, in Angel's Wisdom, this is all explained in some parts of Angel's Wisdom. And so we have this Lemurian race mostly focused in the etheric and physical body. The Atlantean race, which is the next race, mostly focused in the astral body, where its consciousness is centered higher about how its feeling is worked. And when you have consciousness that mostly is focused in the astral body, people have great creative imagination, but their mental sense is still lacking. And so they don't have the logic that we incorporate so easily today, and the general reasoning and conceptual understandings that we have. So some of the reasoning concepts were contradictive with each other, which didn't bother them because they didn't use their mind that strongly, but they used their feelings a lot, and they were very strong in that respect, and their creative imagination as well. Some of them were great artists during certain periods of Atlantean development. So Atlantis was a whole race, well, actually seven sub-races of human beings, and then and so were the Lemurian seven sub-races. Each sub-race focused on the development of one of the major chakras. So their sense in that body developed. And actually all their bodies developed most along that particular focus. And four out of seven were in focus at any particular time. So when we look at this whole procedure, we're growing much more from the development of sense and ray energy, which helps to develop the sense easier. When the rays are focused, the sense takes in energy and grows faster and gives off, we'll call it creative information to that becomes knowledge to the being, and it helps to grow the civilization much faster in certain ways. It's a very great system. It's not evolution as we understand it, but it is profoundly a more creative system than evolution, which is very slow and kind of plotty. So eventually we get to human beings that focus mostly mentally, which is like us. And this race of beings, we've incorporated some of the lower form elements of the Lemurians and in consciousness now, and the Atlanteans, because consciousness never goes away. You can, as long as it's virtuous, it stays forever. Consciousness that is against God, as we already found out with evil, against God, destroys itself. So the consciousness, God doesn't come in and go wham with a bolt of lightning and wipe out beings, consciousness of being, which is worse than wiping out the body of the being. They do it to themselves. Whereas the rest of humanity, as they develop more of God as part of their nature, and they co-create, maybe eventually with God, their consciousness never goes away. It just remains. Consciousness that is enlightened lives forever. Consciousness that is not enlightened and is dark destroys itself. God doesn't destroy it. God is not the destroyer of consciousness. Consciousness can only be destroyed by itself. Wow. That's a pretty powerful principle. And that's one of the principles of Angel's Wisdom. And a lot of people, even who have studied Angel's Wisdom, don't know that principle. Now, why is that? Why is it so hard to get that? Well, because Angel's Wisdom in the past has not been taught very conceptually. It's been taught mostly in bits and pieces and stories and through a thing called mysticism. And when it was taught more conceptually, human beings weren't conceptual enough to understand it. That's during some of the Atlantean Lemurian times. So it's always had a tough road to hoe in people gaining the understanding of Ageless Wisdom. And like I said, in recent times, it's very hard because people have a lot of egotism. They block out some of these principles. And it's tough because it was mystified out of necessity. Too many people were going in the wrong way. And the mysticism still lingers without conceptual understanding. Concepts are what help us to build and grow without there being some kind of evolutionary control involved. So it's really important for us to become more conscious of Ageless Wisdom, which is what tonight's show is about. You see, understand my motives a little bit here. All right, so here we have this really interesting format, we'll call it, of principles being applied to a particular planet, in this case Earth, to grow humanity. But the real focus of this is to grow humanity and to grow the consciousness of humanity so that it reaches a point where it can't or won't go evil. That's not so easily done because there's a plan to do it, and part of that plan, I will reveal to you right now, involves some of the principles of Ageless Wisdom becoming common knowledge. But not knowledge in the sense of like, oh, well, I know this or that. I would say that's just a verbal misunderstanding. The best way to describe it is common understanding. So the common knowledge is just the way most people would put it in using their vernacular, but the real meaning is Ageless Wisdom has to be common understanding. And when it becomes common understanding, it drives out darkness and it becomes light. Well, you know what this show is about? The common understanding of Ageless Wisdom. So there we are. We're on the forefront. We're doing the battle right here. Now, we're the only people doing it now. Some others are trying, but some of them are, unfortunately, trying to do it more from knowledge than from consciousness. They're not trying to develop an understanding. They're trying to just tell people how and what to think about specific, more historical ways of doing things instead of helping people to become thinkers and creators themselves. That's a problem. Okay, so back to our principles. God is seeking to make human beings as self-actualized beings who co-create eventually, voluntarily, and self-initiated with their creator. That's the principle. Now, if you look at it from that standpoint, you could say, well, why mystify things in the first place? Mystification prevents that from happening to a large extent. And the reason why was that evil was catching on to some of the very basics of this process in turning it around using a thing called propaganda to get people to doubt and eventually become self-destructive and destructive to others by reversing the principles. So in a way, they taught the principles so they would become reversed and destructive. And once that became a dominant way of evil behaving, in order to give God a chance to continue the experiment here on Earth, it was necessary to mystify the understanding of Ageless Wisdom because human beings were not intellectually and mentally prepared yet to challenge the propaganda and lies and a lot of other things that evil was creating as a means of destruction. So it was a temporary but long-term. It's been going on for about 14,000 years since the mystification process began. Now we're demystifying Ageless Wisdom right now. You could say literally that is my main job. My main job. So I've got a number of different hats I wear. That's the one I consider very important, demystify. And for those of you who have read my textbook, Life's Hidden Meaning, you know that that textbook does exactly that, the demystification of ageless wisdom. Some of you may know that from certain other ageless wisdom, modern ageless wisdom texts, including the Bailey books, this was predicted to happen right now. Well, actually, when I started to do it back in the 90s. And it will continue to grow, I hope. But it isn't trying to protect or to preserve ancient wisdom, because ageless wisdom has to be in a conscious state of growing in order to be increasing the understanding of human beings. And it can't be a historical-only understanding that is gained, because if that's the case, it isn't doing its job. And it's a contradiction in terms. Okay. So, some of these principles are really fascinating because they are so big. God is not just a being who wants freedom. He wants freedom in the presence of understanding or consciousness. And the two, when put together, become spirit. Spirit, the spirit of life in general, is a balance between freedom, purpose, creativity. It's all names for the same thing, basically. But each name is a piece of it. Along with consciousness, love, and we'll call it even universal love or unconditional love, and planning, and as I already said, understanding, and so much more that has to do with the second part of God's mind. When those parts are balanced together, and the first parts are balanced together, and you bring them together into one, you end up with the thought of God, which is the same as saying spirit. Spirit is a beingness process. So you become spiritualized beingness as you immerse yourself as an expression of the thought of God. Wow. Truly amazing thing. All right, so that's what we mean when we say spirit. And spirit is a real thing and being. It is also a part of our Creator's thought. Now, in the older principles of ageless wisdom, spiritual was actually understood the way I just described it. When it became mystified, again about 13,000 years ago or so, it started even more than that, up to 15,000 years ago. But it became when it became mystified, spiritual became more distant from God. So it's not the mind of God, and became more objectified as various parts of beingness. In some case, of actually being beings. And so this is the element of what happens when you mystify something, is you lose the full nature, the full understanding of what the meaning of spiritual is. Okay? But that's part of God's thought. God's thought is that if you can't have the whole, then the loss of the whole results in a difficulty in being one with God. And after a while, this grates on people and they seek more of closeness with their Creator if they're not contaminated with darkness. Very interesting stuff. Fascinating stuff. Why don't we take a little bit of a break here, a little bit of a rest? I just wanted to let you all know that if you happen to be in the Phoenix area, generally, this coming Monday, which is May 21st, you can come over to Barnes & Noble in Tempe, at the Tempe Marketplace. That's over on McClintock, if you know where that is. And if you don't, it's by McClintock, just to the is north of the university. But if that doesn't make sense, you can always Google it, call them, whatever. They'll take it. Barnes & Noble, Tempe Marketplace. I'll be holding a discussion group. It's kind of an open metaphysical discussion group. And I'll be kind of holding it in the sense that I'll be there to interact, moderate, and to some extent add to some of the things that we talked about. From 7 to 8:15 or thereabouts, we might go to 8:30 p.m. And if you want information, call 480-966-3132. Let us know that you're interested in being there, or you're coming, or you're not coming, or you want to know how to come, or whatever, and we'll give you whatever we can about that. And if you're also interested in the archives of the shows, you can get them at agelesswisdom.com, in case you don't know that. But you also can go on this radio station site and get them there, too. You have that as an option. And so you can listen in and have almost, it's getting on to 9 years of shows. Now, I've been on PBS, I think, about six of those. But the point is that if you want to hear them, they're available. And my suggestion is you kind of skip over the first year or so. Those are very short, and they had a lot of guests on them. But sometimes Angel's Wisdom got lost in the other ideas that people wanted to present. And, of course, since the show is about that, I didn't care for that too much, and I thought it was kind of not good use of time. And speaking of time, as the shows were on longer, they got the longer period of time, they got to be longer in terms of how much airtime they got each time it was on. So we eventually have shows now of 2 hours length, which is great. For a while, they were actually somewhere in an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and a half. And before that, they were still an hour. And the very earliest shows, I actually was at less than that because it was on a more commercial station where we had to allow a lot of different commercial things coming on, including news and everything else. And those shows are like 40 minutes, 44 minutes or whatever. So those are real short. But again, a lot of those, not all of them, but a lot of those were had guests on who didn't necessarily have an understanding of Angel's Wisdom. Okay, so getting back to what we're talking about this evening, I want to introduce some other principles of Angel's Wisdom so that you can kind of chew them over, think about them, and we will further examine them in a little while. And another principle of Angel's Wisdom is that human beings will extend their senses through the development of the lower kingdoms under their tutorage, and sometimes they will, unfortunately, use and abuse these lower kingdoms for their own edification and greed, etc. But that's the nature of human beings, to overcome their physical, we'll say, imperfections, fetters, problems. And so this is God's plan. This is God's, looking into how to develop these lower dimensions is by the use of human beings incorporating into their kingdom, the lower kingdoms, which expands their own senses and bodies effectively, and allows them to grow life much faster than evolution. As a matter of fact, human beings that bring things into their kingdom in any large extent overpower tremendously evolution and will confound even the most evolutionary principles, changing them. I mean, if you look what we've done with our pets, as an example, it's a good one. But we've done it with many things, and we do it with things we don't think of it as evolutionary, but they actually in some sense are, such as chemicals and the development of chemistry and the development of technologies that modify the physical world to extreme levels. There are literally millions of compounds, especially organic, that have been developed by human beings, which would not have occurred in normal nature for maybe who knows how long, if ever. And human beings are responsible for that. We have the greatest effect right now in the mineral kingdom, and then next the plant kingdom, and least, but still a great deal nowadays, on the animal kingdom. And as we are having these effects, our civilization is growing. Sometimes it grows dark when we destroy those other kingdoms. Not so good. And sometimes it gets very enlightened when we help them to develop and we integrate them in ways that are enlightening to them and to us and to everything else in life. God's plan is for us to do that, and in Ageless Wisdom, the principles employed are consciousness over evolution. Consciousness becomes the primary focus and not evolution. So here civilization is the development not from evolution, but from consciousness. And that makes sense because if you look at how fast civilization has grown, even in the last 100 years, say, it's enormous, and you could never use an evolutionary model to prove that that worked to do this fast. It just doesn't make sense. Evolution is a model that requires literally hundreds of thousands to millions of years to become as effective as the growth of civilization has been in very, very short periods of time. You could not explain it based purely on the evolutionary model. I mean, a lot of people say, well, survival of the fittest, we had the wars, a lot of technology was developed during the wars, therefore no, come on. When you come up with those kinds of leaps of thought, you forget the basic tenets of evolution is that it's survival of the fittest based upon adaptability and on the strong overpowering the weak, right? Isn't that what it's all about? I mean, if you go with the Darwinian, well, okay, then we've got a bit of a problem because that doesn't explain civilization much at all. It maybe explains some things about wars, but not very well. And it doesn't explain the time element. The time element is not being caused by some unique changes instantly in our senses and brains and physical form. It's all about consciousness. Evolution and consciousness are on opposite sides of the moon. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're exclusive. It's just that they're not mutually supportive. Okay, so that being the situation, we have to let go of that model and apply a totally different one, which is the Ageless Wisdom model, which says that consciousness is the way that human beings shall grow, not evolution. Humans use evolution as a tool on lower kingdoms. How do you like that? They can use evolution as a tool on human beings, but when they do, that's a dark side of being human. To treat human beings as animals or plants or minerals is considered extremely dark by most people. Now, maybe if you're a dictator or, a member of some radical thinking group, your disconcern for life may say, well, this is fine to do that. Well, let's just breed people, make them into whatever we want, and that would be simple enough for us. Let's get rid of all this freedom nonsense. And in many ways, the elitist people who today profess to be socialists and central organizers are really dark, for exactly that reason. They are also very strongly evolutionists, most of them, and anti-traditional God. So you can see how it all fits together. If you have that idea of ignoring principles of Ageless Wisdom and say, well, I'm just going with this idea of survival of the fittest, and we'll just make a system here resembling growing animals. And we'll call the animals that aren't like us the masses. We'll make sure the masses are controlled by us. And we'll dictate to them how to live and what to live, what to eat, what not to eat, what to do, what not to do, etc. and we'll be the ones who are the bosses of all the other ones. Okay. That's evil. Now, as I was saying, evil wants to use these days propaganda to convince us all that it's got it right and God's got it wrong, if God exists at all. This freedom thing is way, way oversold. We don't have to be free. We just want to be secure and comfortable, right? You want to be able to grow old and make sure you have health care. Forget about whether the health care is good for you or not. It doesn't really matter. We'll make sure you have it so you feel good. But you know what? It's going to cost you. It's going to cost you a lot. Like all your freedom and half your money, which buys freedom to some extent, you got nothing. But that's what we want. Kind of keeps you under control. And what else we'll do? We'll do you another big favor. All this voting stuff, you don't need to vote. We'll just make that a mockery. Or we'll steal the election somewhere. Or we'll cancel them. You don't need to vote. Trust us. We know what we're doing. All right. So we have a system right now that is as much dark, and the whole world's adopting it or has played with it, as the good of Republican democracies and giving people the right, in a collective sense, to create government and not for government to control and create them. A limited government is the only way that could be achieved with, by the way. So this is the conflict, and it's going on right now. And throughout the world, it's being challenged. Unfortunately, by the dark side, very successfully, with socialism becoming a dominant form of many governments. Scary. Look what happened in France last week. So I think that it's important to recognize that we are, you know, right there. We're in the battle of it. Now, this is the time to be alive, if you ask me. If you want to be where things are really going to be hopping, it's right here on Earth right now. But it's also going to be miserable. Dangerous if you are afraid of dying. Not if you don't care. And remember, we're all going to die. It's really how you live that matters. The process is a interesting one from this focus. We have God and spirit opposed by arrogance, egotism, mostly misguided intellectualism, and at the bottom of it all, the desire to have power and control over others because someone isn't creative enough for themselves. Those that claim they are great leaders but seek to do it by control and power and force are the worst of leaders and the least creative of beings. That's why I suggest some people read Ayn Rand, because she got that part right. Okay, so what is the situation? If we have this conflict going on right now, what does Ageless Wisdom tell us is going to happen? Everybody wants to know the outcome. All right, well, basically, it's up to humans to decide, because since humans control the lower kingdom, it's human civilization that presently is the, we'll say, both the culprit and the savior. And it's the bottom line is that evil is attempting to usurp authority and control over everything. Yeah. I'm reading a book, a really interesting book. It's called Screwed. Screwed. Yeah, Dick Morris and his wife Eileen. I forgot her last name. It'll come to me. I have written this book, which is, I think, fascinating because it's fairly objective. It isn't a holy roller kind of super Republican work or anything like that. Maybe a little more libertarian than anything else. But it is actually a fairly objective book, discussing what's going on in the world and why and who's getting screwed, which is mostly us here in the United States. But It's more about ageless wisdom than politics, as I'm reading it anyway. It's about how consciousness is being trampled on and challenged, and freedom is being literally, by the day, destroyed in place of the desires of darkness to be in control, and evil people, or dark people, wanting to substitute their quote-unquote great knowledge along with their desires to be in power at the cost of those who seek to be with God, who are spiritual. And it's a very interesting book because it calls things what they really are. He mentions that Obama is a socialist whose ideas are even more antithetical to freedom than most of the socialists who exist in Europe and some other parts of the world. Now, you may not believe that about Obama. You may say, oh, he's an American figure, he's the president. Well, not if you look at it from their explanations. So you might want to look at that and see what they say and whether you agree or not. But when you look at all of these questions that are proposed in this one book, and you compare it to what some of the things are that I'm talking about, Angel's Wisdom, you put them side to side, you say, holy cow, these people are actually talking about Angel's Wisdom. I wonder if they know that. Well, that's the other interesting thing about Angel's Wisdom. You can practice enormous parts of it, and you can do so with great, creative fervor and even amazing accuracy in its expressions through your spiritual service, yet not have a clue that what you're doing is called ageless wisdom or has anything to do with what I'm talking about tonight. How is that possible? How is it that a group, and there's thousands and thousands, of maybe millions of groups of people doing ageless wisdom, and they don't know it? That's what I refer to when I talk about groups. I'm not talking about just a few, here and there, holier-than-thou spiritual kind of groups that call themselves spiritual groups. Most people who are practicing angels' wisdom and who are co-creating with God don't call themselves anything like that. But they are spiritual nonetheless. Is it okay if they say they're spiritual? Is it okay that they call themselves a group of angels' wisdom lovers or whatever? That's fine. That's even better. But it isn't required. Now, why would somebody have the consciousness to create more of God and not co-create in ways that expresses to themselves they're doing the work of God through a vehicle called, in some circles, Angel's Wisdom? Because they don't care. It just plain doesn't matter to them. They want to co-create with God because that's how God created me. Not because that they have senses to tell them it's the thing to do. They follow their senses. They have consciousness that tells them it's the thing to do. And they have, underlying all of that, life experiences and interactions with others. All of it comes together, and they do it. But they don't have to be taught. It's like drinking or eating. They don't have to be taught. They can do it. And many do. Is it better if you have the consciousness and say, I read all this stuff by this guy McFlower tells me? Maybe. For some people, it is better that they have the understanding. But for those who say they don't need it, they aren't penalized and they don't have to have it to be good, to be virtuous, to be enlightened. Many people, many more than those that have the understanding, do not, and yet are great, great consciousness beings who have understanding of many areas where they are contributing. Isn't that fascinating? And that's another principle of Angel's Wisdom. God said you don't even have to give me any acknowledgement, and you can still co-create with me. That's a God who sacrificed even itself in recognition to those that he created, or from that recognition of those that he created, so So God does not seek, nor does it need worship. I know your religion is something different. But according to Angel's wisdom and how you can examine it in the real world, how it works, it's obvious that God doesn't need or want. God only wants for us to be as free to create and as loving and as conscious being, as conscious of being as we can be. Wow. Some people, it actually could obstruct in some of their belief structure and their knowledge base to go down the path of trying to fully understand everything that is involved in the spiritual. Because it might preclude them from doing the most important spiritual work they're doing while they're gaining the understanding about it, which isn't God's desire, because God isn't. God said, you're not here, basically, to immerse yourself in understanding. You're about God. You're here to create service and be spiritual for others' advantageous purposes. And that's all ageless wisdom. So everything we experience and is verified by our own beingness, especially civilization, has long ago been explained in ageless wisdom, and it holds itself to be true. Isn't that fascinating? Wow. Now, how come God doesn't really care? Well, because human beings have a limited capacity of consciousness, a limited capacity of intelligence, and a limited capacity of life itself. If the human expends a lot of that limit on the need in itself to understand what it's doing and why from a standing outside of what it is doing in service, it could take away from its service. If your service is to teach, like me, you get kind of the best of both worlds, because it is a requirement if you're going to teach to understand what you're teaching, and therefore you have to understand the ageless wisdom part and the elements of your service. But that is really a more untraditional and experiential role that people are taking. Most people don't do that. They don't teach, and they don't have the level of understanding, even of what they're doing, that they do great creative things that are spiritual. I'm glad about that, by the way, because it leaves more freedom and increases the level that people participate. And it doesn't make it so rigid that we all have to become experts in ageless wisdom. We don't. But does it help to demystify it? And for people who are interested in listening to people like me or to participating in discussions or whatever, is that a benefit? Sure. If you want to go that route, I recommend it. But for those who don't and aren't, we should never condemn them. We should instead applaud the work they are doing in service to others. And being a part of God does not mean that you have to understand every part that you're being. It just means that you've got to serve in some capacity, in some ways. Enlightenment is the answer, and the service is the method. Wow. All right, so where does that take us at this point? Well, if we're looking into God's mind, we start seeing some amazing and brilliant and beyond brilliant ideas. Where did God come up with this? And the answer is, God is a self-created, self-actualized being. It came from an infinite realm of possible outcomes, and some of those outcomes joined together and became a thinking being. When they came together, they became a thinking being because they excluded the possibilities of some things. It rejected those possibilities by creating two fields, one of the thought of God and the other of opposing thoughts. God became a real being. That's how you create consciousness into a being. And if you want to know more about that and better understanding of it, read Life's in Meaning, because in there, there's a chapter about it, and it's all throughout the book, explains more about this. That's where God came from. He created itself from an infinite field of possibilities. Why doesn't life replicate that? Life is not capable of taking an infinite field of possibilities and taking some of that field and creating itself, and then the remainder, it chooses to exclude from its reality or from its universe. We don't have anywhere near that capability. We have trouble enough organizing our daily life and getting to and from places and doing some small things. But we still are a much downsized junior version of that God. That God said, I will grow by creating life that will be free to eventually become me. Eventually. It will be a very long process. But I will help it in numerous ways, giving it great gifts and grace to allow it to follow this path that it chooses to become a self-actualized and creative and enlightened Zion. Enlightenment is the light of thought together, has two parts to it, which includes the parts that make light, if they're properly balanced. And that's what spirit is as well. So spirit is enlightening. Spiritual thought is thought that enlightens. You see. Okay, when God chose to exclude so much of the realm of possibilities, infinite now, it became, in many respects, a very limited being because it excluded so much. But the exclusions are more important than the creations, you see, because it allows life to create most of its universe. It doesn't do it for life. It creates certain principles, and those principles apply certain ways, sometimes producing even certain physical laws. But regardless, most of the universe is created by life itself. What God gives us is the universe vacant of most of the irrational, some people would call it the impossible, events, or likely impossible events that could take place. It rids the universe of that by its own creation of itself. So we don't have a universe by its nature that is unfair, irrational, without God. We don't. We have a universe that has God in it and has made rationality, has chosen to create most of the things that has made life so bearable and so wonderful, and has made our universe in many ways beautiful and organized in so many other ways. It's truly a great challenge and an amazing accomplishment that a being created all this. What about the folks that say, well, there can be any being? Science will explain everything. Beings are just our fancies. There's no being of God or whatever. Well, the problem is this show is a direct antithetical comment on that belief, because so much of what I've said is verifiable if you examine it from the reasons I've given, that it breaks through and crushes the people who want to believe the other way. I don't deny them the belief, but there's some rationality to our own observations that tells us things that people who want the world to be a mechanical, non-God, fully, completely materialized world, have little chance of succeeding in that because the world isn't like that, and there are vast, if not almost infinite, ways of experiencing the world that proves it otherwise. Proves that this is not a world of godlessness. And most people do come to that realization. But regardless, if you have or haven't, if you keep an open mind, if you can, I think that will save you in this respect. Wow. All right, so now we've come to the point where we realize that the Creator, or God, is a being of enormous love and compassion, but also seeks for freedom and creation, and to not interfere very much, especially at the level of humanity. I know there's about praying, and everybody believes it's very important to have a connection with your God and your spiritual thing. But here's the reason God doesn't want to interfere. Anything that alters our own choices, removes from us our own beingness, it makes us less of a created being. And unless God's going to substitute and zap us with a big bolt of lightning, say, well, here you can have something to replace all those things you're losing, it's a bad deal. It's a bad deal for everything. It's a bad deal for life, for us, for God. So as much as God does have compassion, and sometimes does even intervene, I'm going to get to that in a few minutes, most of the time it does not intervene for a good reason. To do so lessens who and what we are. It lessens us in most circumstances. So I'm not telling you not to pray, but if you do, or even ask or think about getting something in your connection with God, or some part of God, as you imagine it to be, whether it's an angel or whatever, instead I suggest that you pray for others to become more God-like themselves, and for you yourself to do so, rather than to gain something, even if it's to fix your broken leg, or to regain your vision if you've lost it, or whatever it might be. Anything that you seek to gain that is not of true service to others is no more than a selfish desire. And if you were to be so rewarded by getting it, it would be more of a punishment than a relief and reward for being, in some way, a good follower. The punishment would be in the reduction of self, and self-reduction causes suffering. Because the self is the form of consciousness that we exist within. And when you reduce it, we suffer. So God doesn't do it because we would suffer immensely. Now, is there an exception to this general principle? Yes. As a matter of fact, almost every principle I tell you, there are some exceptions to, because otherwise the universe would be too rigid. And again, it has its negative side. What is the exception, say, to this particular principle? Why would God intervene? Because, in the whole sense of karma in time and space, there's a thing called collective karma, I've mentioned this several times in the past, in which it's evident what we're going to do in the future to God. It's already known what we did in the past, and our present actions show what our future direction is going to be. All put together, when that is determined, we have made the choices to bring us to that point. And even though it involves the future, we've already created parts of it in ourselves. Under that basis, it's okay for a being, or God itself, and or both, to intervene in circumstances where what we're doing has profound effects on the benefit and growth of others in spiritual terms. Then you can expect assistance at certain key times when necessary and when God believes that is the correct thing to do, or a higher being that is not maybe God but soul-like, or is our soul, or is a member of a kingdom higher than human, or maybe it just comes from some very enlightened humans. But whatever the situation, it's someone who is definitely more conscious than we are. And this allows us the opportunity to get help without suffering any or very many consequences from the situation. So it's a fascinating thing. It doesn't guarantee that you won't suffer at all because of the mitigating circumstances. It's just a balance. So the balance may be 90% of the help will help us and we'll be in service. 10% may cause some level of suffering. And many people don't understand that principle, and they think if they suffer at all, then God must have it wrong, or they must misunderstand God, or whatever. And that's not, it's just not the way the universe works. They just don't understand about this. Because maybe there's some level of selfishness included within all of our truly altruistic nature, and that level of selfishness pans out into the future where we will do some things that will be greedy and selfish, and so we lose some consciousness, even though we gain more from that which we serve, we lose some consciousness in that we will suffer the consequences of that, which is suffering itself. And that's why some people condemn it. If they only experience the suffering, maybe not enough joy or bliss in the initial stages of operation of them becoming more spiritual, and because there is a lag time oftentimes in that situation, and then they conclude, ah, here I did all this and look what happened to me. I'm suffering worse. Their problem is they don't have a collective understanding of karma. They can't the future weapon. And the future part of their thinking is distorted in reason. Okay, so that's one of the areas that the principles of God get confused and muddied sometimes. Let's talk about some other practical issues that people have that we can maybe gain some inroad to. A lot of people think that the things that I talk about, and many others do, about ageless wisdom are like written in stone. And like, if we say it, it must be right. You know? Well, let me give you some ideas here. 70 to 80% of what I say is most likely accurate. Most likely. Why? Because a lot of it comes from some service I did, and some ability to access the mental world. And sometimes it's mental akasha. Problem with mental akasha, though, is that it's only 70-plus percent accurate, and the rest of it's nonsense. What is the mental akasha? It's the memories and thoughts of umpteen human beings over a long period of time. And those memory and thoughts, then, you can gather information about ageless wisdom from them. But some of those memories and thoughts are just goofy. They're not right. And they're still part of the mental world, or part of the mental akasha. For those of you who are familiar, there have been great prophets, we'll call them, who have talked about ageless wisdom ad infinitum, of course. And some of them have whole societies devoted to them, you know. I don't know if I should name names about this point, but I think those people who did that were in contact with the same thing I'm talking about. And sometimes they would do it while they're asleep, sometimes while semi-awake, sometimes fully awake. But the best way to do it is actually from a Buddhic perspective, where you're able to see the parts that are probably confused and not use them as a constructive element in what you're explaining. That's safer. The better you're at doing that, the more your teaching will be accurate and helpful. But not everybody does that. Okay, I name it again. One person, Edgar Cayce. Edgar Cayce was probably one of the greatest prophets. But his predictions are not going to exceed the 70-80% because they're coming mostly from this content that is lacking 100% proof. Eventually, later in his life, he realized that. But, you know, hey, doesn't matter. Still did a good job. And if you're that accurate about future events, it's pretty darn good. Okay, so in looking at this whole process, then God intended for it to be less than 100% true when humans became conscious of and understood God. God recognized that humans would not do so at 100% level because of a limitation in consciousness of our will. And that consciousness that's needed at a minimum is called intuitional or Buddhic consciousness, and humans in general lack that. So the interesting thing is that we really, as we become more spiritual, we may recognize our deficiencies, and we can virtually never, as human beings, be perfect. Human beings are the part of life that eventually understand their levels of imperfection and accept them without great suffering and without turning eventual, without denying God because they're not perfect. It's only those beings who seek to be absolutely perfect who are at the greatest risk of eventually rejecting God and becoming dark. And in many cases, they are very intelligent to begin with, but lack consciousness. That's it. Okay, so if we look into God's mind, why is this the case? Well, you've got to have some kind of bridge. You can't have, like, just one day you are over here and you have virtually no consciousness because you're some kind of animal running around the forest, and the next day suddenly you're a fully conscious, enlightened being who's ready to move on to do greater and better things because you're much more one with your Creator. Well, it just doesn't work that way because although we're not evolutionary, the building of consciousness still takes a huge amount of time, literally hundreds of incarnated lifetimes, of which most of those lifetimes are not spent here in the physical world. So think of it from this perspective. We are so encumbered by the limitations of sense and time that we experience physical life. We are most of the time screwed up in an illusion while we're physical life. And then we spend a lot of the astral life and some of the mental life undoing some of the mistakes we made and resolving them. Not even 100% time. Okay, so to have the bridge in consciousness from that part of life which is evolutionarily controlled and that part of life which is controlled by the development of consciousness, you've got to have the bridge, and the bridge is the human being. We are literally on the cross of life between animals and super beings. And we're necessary, it's necessary for us to do this. And the reason we spend our life going around a circle of life between the physical and eventually the lower to higher mental plane is because we are unable to master this until many hundreds of lifetimes have gone by in most cases. And we screw up far more often than we achieve enlightenment. What's the reason for that? Well, because the senses of a human being are tenuous at best. On Earth, they were created at an accelerated rate, I'm going back to the beginning of the show now, which caused them to be imperfect for a very long period of time. Even today they are. The mental senses are particular. And it left us in a position in which more was expected and needed than could be created in the time that we had. Human beings, by the fact that the planet decided, the logos of the planet decided, along with God's plan in general, to accelerate everything by over 10 million years. That left us, human beings, paying the price, so to speak. But there's karma. We were on a planet that this planet had created earlier. Some of us were. Some of our souls were. Not all of us. Remember that. And we didn't do so well. So we waited around in the soul form until some of the animals on this planet were capable of sustaining a human consciousness. And then that was brought together instead of there being a missing link, per se. There's an instantaneous, almost, development of human beings that is a true created link. And we came from that. Will that ever be found? Only when de-evolution is understood. That not only do we evolve, but we eventually disevolve, and then you can see the mind of God in the process. And only when science recognizes there's a spiritual background, spiritual reason for the existence of life, not just mankind, but humankind, but life itself. And that's another principle in angel's wisdom, isn't it? That we don't really know and don't understand many of the things that we are actually creatively involved in. It's hidden from us. Because of our own illusions, for the most part, sometimes because of prior mysticism and mystification. And so here we have this profound new understanding of humans that is yet and still mostly unrecognized. But I'm teaching every week, and so are many other people doing that. And maybe we will see the great change in the next decade or two about this issue. It will help. It will help. It doesn't mean that the majority of people are still going to be understanding of the Creator at some profound level, but it may mean that the real resistances may melt away and the real danger of evil taking over through mental darkness may be abated. That would be great. We are looking forward, I'm looking forward, to a world that is truly a sacred world, saved from all of the darkness that seems to surround where we are right now. We will see this most likely in our lifetime, depending upon how old you are and how many more years you've got. If you're going to be around for the next 20 or 30 years, the outcome of this great battle may become evident and clear. Let us all do our best to make it an outcome that leads to enlightenment instead of suffering. It leads to a world in which there is light rather than darkness, a world in which there is beauty rather than chaos, a world in which each of us can participate with the dignity and the understanding, meeting our needs to be of service to others. That's what we should all be seeking at this time. Well, we are out of time, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.